My name is Zed Goldberg, and I am speaking with Jimmy McDonald. Jimmy, you've been here quite a few times, well, twice anyway. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ed. Always a pleasure to see and talk to you.
I have your latest book, which is entitled Tammy Wynette, and I guess that's what the book is about, huh?
I guess that's right. Okay. That and many other things. You got George Jones in there. You got Billy Sherrill. You got a whole cast of characters.
Well, you can't talk about Tammy without talking about George.
So. Indeed, sir. That's correct.
Okay. It's published by Viking. I've spoken to you twice. Once for your biography of Russ Meyer, the Stanley Kubrick of soft porn.
Yes, indeed.
I love that book. I thought it was hysterically funny. I thought that Russ Meyer was so strange as a subject. It was so strange. I really admire you for taking that on.
Well, thank you, sir.
And then Shaky, the biography of Neil Young.
Yes, indeed.
Who, has he, by the way, has he cut you out of his life?
Yeah, I'm like one of those, you know, KGB photographs where they just erase the agent, you know,
right.
And he's never been there. He never was there. And it never happened.
You're down the memory hole.
That's right. What are you going to do, Ed?
You know, when Sean Levy did his biography of Jerry Lewis, the same thing happened.
Right.
So these guys just don't want anybody to know about him.
Well, you know, what are you going to do? I got a book out of it. I'm happy.
Yep. Let's talk about that. You're a journalist and I guess a nonfiction writer. Sort of a historian, in effect, because isn't biography a kind of the marriage between journalism and history?
Yeah, I'd say so. I don't know. I'm kind of a professional ne'er-do-well. You know, the biography police are always on my back because I do these things that I'm not supposed to do. Like,
for example,
in this book, I write letters to Tammy, and people just are bent out of shape about it. Half of them are, half of them. I mean, one day I get a rave from Jan Maslin in the New York Times, the best review I'll probably ever get in my life. The next day, this guy in the Washington Post says, worst book I've ever reviewed in 20 years of reviewing books. I read it on the plane. I was praying for the plane to crash so I wouldn't have to finish
it. Wish I could get a review like that. You know how many books that sold?
Hey, man, no. I was ecstatic to get those two back to back. I must be doing something at least halfway interesting.
Well, first of all, getting a good review from Janet Maslin is excellent. And you can be very happy that you didn't draw Michiko Kakutani.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, indeed. I'm a mom and pop shop. I'll never get up to that rarefied status. Well,
lucky you. but people did mention the letters. And
yeah.
Not only was I not offended, I found them completely innocuous. It was just
right.
Your way of talking to your subject, who, of course, can't even respond to you. So
yeah, that's right. And I mean, you know, when you do biographies, I think all biographers start talking to their subjects. They just don't put it down on
paper. Well, how long did you live with Tammy Wynette?
Four years. You know, she was in my head a long time. And this was a very hard book to get out of. I mean, the last few decades of her life were just unbearably grim, and I just never thought I'd finish it. But, you know, you get to where you're kind of talking to the person. I put them down. I thought, oh, these are such cliche, so hard on my sleeve. And then they made me laugh. And when they made me laugh, I knew they were going in the book. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it goes.
Well, I certainly have no – I would never insult your integrity ever. I mean that. That's really true. Why biography? You know, that's really a peculiar thing to get into, winnowing around people's lives to develop something book-length about them. That's what first
attracted
you.
It's kind of like a disease, Ed. I really do think so. When I was a little kid
– Are you a yenta? Is that the whole thing?
Yeah. When I was a kid, you know, I'd get on a subject like, for instance, sharks and then dinosaurs and then Abe Lincoln. I remember my folks taking me to Ford's Theater and they had to get another tour guide to answer my pesky questions. That's how annoying I was. I had to know everything about a subject. And, you know, I just kind of fell into this, honestly. I just started writing about people that I admired and that nobody seemed to be writing about. And that led to these books, and here we are, and it's become a career. I don't really even know how.
I used to be one of those people who thought that country music died with Hank Williams and Patsy Cline. And part of the thing that convinced me of that was the country music that appeared in the mid to late 60s that was full of string arrangements and pop sensibility, and you know, where was the honky tonk? Where was the guys that you know, spent 300 days a year in places where people threw beer bottles at them? I mean, we wound up with, you know, fat kids with hats who grew up in the suburbs listening to Whitesnake,
playing
country music.
I know. But that's the way it always happens, isn't it? You start out with something that's so pure it hurts. And by the end of it, it's all turned into a PT Cruiser somehow. I don't know how that happens. Well, you do know how. I mean, it's just it's the American way, it seems, and the way of the world. So it's a drag, definitely. But thankfully, you know, and now with the internet, I mean, you can find any obscure anything anybody ever recorded. I mean, if you're a fan, it's probably the best time to be a music fan. Not for the people making it or selling it, certainly, but for anybody who's a fanatic, I mean, you can find anything anywhere, anytime.
So that leads to the question, why is Tammy Wynette special?
Well, Ed, when going back to when I was young, I was a real record hound, you know. A friend and I were in a stinky, mildewy Bloomington apartment. I can remember it like it was yesterday. And we were playing Can You Top This, playing each other records. I played him some Charlie Feathers, and I thought, ha-ha, you know, try to top
that. One
Hand
Loose.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. One of the great records of all time.
Yep.
And I thought, well, top that. And for some reason I had steered clear of Tammy because I thought she was too slick and too string laid and all that stuff. And he played me this record, Apartment Number 9. And from the first notes out of Pete Drake's Lonely Steel Guitar, I was just hooked. I mean, this dame just burrowed a hole right into my head and heart. And I knew from that day on, not only was I going to keep up with everything she did, I was going to write about her someday. And, you know, so much later, here we are after 4 years of research on this book.
Okay. Now, you didn't hit you with Ursula Hickey or anybody like that?
No.
Another one of the great names.
There's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
For good reason, I think.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yes. I don't think we're going to see the Ursula Hickey biography anytime very soon.
Yeah, but, you know, well, okay. We can talk about this offline because there's plenty of other people like him that might – Elvis Wayne.
Oh, know? No. If somebody would let me write, say, the biography of Jimmy Wages, a guy who only cut like 4 records, its son that never came out, and I think they're the greatest rockabilly records of all time. If I can only talk somebody into letting me do that, I'd do it. That's where my heart lies. I mean, it's very hard to find a mixture of something you're obsessed with and somebody who will give you 10 cents to write a book.
Free advice. It sounds like a 25,000-word magazine article to me.
Yeah, I know, and that's another thing, man. Find the magazine that's going to print it. I mean, I don't know. I wrote this ginormous thing on Link Ray. I couldn't find anybody to write.
You're kidding.
No.
There would be no rock and roll. There would be no heavy metal. There'd be no punk rock. There'd be no hard rock. There'd be nothing without Link Ray.
Hey, man, Link was the greatest, and yeah. I did this whole thing about his whole life, and I couldn't find anybody who wanted to run it, no how. So I threw it up online for free, and I get more mail about that than anything practically I've ever written.
Did you see the Chicken Shack in Accokeek, Maryland?
No. I didn't get that far, but I did spend time with Link, and Link was a character, man. He was really boy. I picked some, but he's one of the more intense individuals I've been around. May he rest in peace. What a great, great guy, great musician. Changed the face of the world, as you said.
Absolutely. Well, we need to talk about Tammy Wynette.
Yes.
Yeah. Tammy Wynette, she was born Virginia Wynette Pugh, P-U-G-H. Mm-hmm. And later on in her life, when she was already a major star, there was something that her crew and her hangers-on used to say is, will Virginia show up tonight? What does that mean?
Yeah, right. It's Virginia in the house. And what that means is that, unfortunately, later in her life, Tammy had a lot of health problems that led her into the world of painkillers. And they helped her physically, but she also got quite an addiction. And they'd be FedExed in at different points of the road. And her band would just want to know if it were Virginia, that was code name for Tammy's got her medication. And she may be a little schnockered by Showtime. And in fact, the show she did at Chinook Winds Casino for the opening, I talk about in this book, she was so zonked, she started taking off her jewelry on stage because she thought she was going to bed. Luckily, the backup singers kind of covered for her, but the curtain came down, and apparently the people in charge there still talk about it, although they didn't want to talk about it with me. So, you know, That's one of the sad sides of Tammy's life. She had her troubles.
When I read this book, the only thing that I could think of was, this is country music's Judy Garland. This is I'm wondering if there are drag queens out there who do Tammy Wynette.
Oh, yeah. One of them is very angry about what I wrote in the book because I mentioned a little encounter she had with Tammy, and she wasn't too happy with my portrayal of it. But you can't make everybody happy, Ed. But definitely. I mean, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. Definitely, I would say Judy Garland is a good analogy. Tammy lived every drop of the song she sang.
The pain, the drugs, the poor choices in men, the sorry end, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Yep.
And that's, I hate to say it, but that's one reason I love her. I mean, because I'm a sucker for a sad song. And boy, when you get into a female vocalist singing a sad song in country music, I don't think you can better Tammy. She really, she took it. She beat it to death. She took that sad song and just squeezed every teardrop out of it.
Well, that's a talent, you know, because the cliche sad country song is in fact a cliche.
Yeah.
And you know, remember the generic country song about your dog dying and your pickup truck falling apart and your girlfriend leaving you and you're getting drunk, and I mean, it's always all there, the infidelity, the the booze, the whole thing.
Right.
So to make that different, to raise it above the level of the crap that was around her, was a gift.
Yes, indeed. No. And that's the thing about Tammy, and of course with Jones, who she ended up marrying, her idol there. You know, they sang it, and from the first syllable out of their lips, you just believed them.
Mm-hmm. Was that the quality of truthfulness of, I've lived this and it's coming out of my mouth? Is that it?
Well, I don't know exactly. You know, it's a mystery. But definitely, you know, I don't know. You just hear Tammy sing and you believe it. And, I mean, some of these songs are hard to believe because they're so damn hokey. I mean, you take a song like D-I-V-O-R-C-E. I love the song, you know.
It's pretty hokey.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, they're spelling the words out. But, I mean, Tammy, the way she sings it, man. I mean, you know, somehow it's not so hokey. You believe it. It's life.
The two singers with whom in her age group in her cultural time, probably Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
And each was extremely different. None of the three is alike really in any way.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, definitely.
How would you put her against the other two? I mean, in terms of the quality of her music and the content of her music.
Oh, well, I would say that Tammy was the most extreme of the three, first of all, in terms of delivery and subject matter. Loretta wrote a lot more songs, so did Dolly. Tammy was kind of lazy in that department. She wrote some great songs, but she kind of ran out of gas later on in her career and really kind of did stop writing. So she didn't have the oompa as a songwriter that those two did necessarily. And again, she just took this very narrow form, the sad ballad about love, and just went over the cliff with it. And that's what I love about her. It's not versatility. Although she could have, you know, it was always my dream that, you know, if Tammy could have cut a record with Willie Mitchell, who produced all the Al Green records,
mm-hmm.
I think she could have done a great R&B record. But Tammy wouldn't have it. You know, she was country and to the bitter end, and she didn't want any watering down, although there was some of it in her life towards the end. So there's something about Tammy that's just really extreme, both as an artist and a person, that I you don't find that she has the cultishness or the widespread appeal of a Loretta or Dolly. There's something slightly off-putting about Tammy. And again, a lot of it has to do with the song Stand By Your Man. I mean, that's a song that divides people all the time.
Well, early in the book, you mentioned that that was the cultural norm of the fundamentalist Christian churches that she grew up in, and that
yeah,
milieu.
Yeah, right. And
the man is the head of the family, period.
Yeah, right. And Billy Sherrill, her producer, who's definitely the Svengali behind the big blonde wig upon Tammy's head, they both saw eye to eye on this. And yet when you study that record and you study that lyric, there's a lot of room for interpretation, which is what makes it a great record, I think. You can, you know.
Because the tagline is really a put-down. After all, he's just a man.
Right. You can see it that way. Now, Tammy swears that she didn't mean it that way. But, yes, I mean, you just said the line. And, I mean, if you think about it, you think, well, stand by your man. So it's an interesting little conundrum, that song. And as many a zillion times as I listen to it, I always chuckle when I hear it because it has that extra layer of vagueness that I think elevates it into something special.
I'd like to remind our listeners I'm speaking with Jimmy McDonough. His last name is spelled McDonough. Title of the book is Tammy Wynette, as you might have gathered from our conversation. It's published by Viking. I want to talk about, you mentioned Billy Sherrill, who I know about Billy Sherrill before I read the book because I fell in with a bunch of hardcore country people and rockabilly people back in D.C., and Billy Sherrill was a legend.
Right.
Before he met Tammy Wynette, he was a legend.
Yeah.
But he's one of the men that helped and twisted her life in equal measure, I think, the others being George Jones and George Ritchie.
Yeah, right.
I could never figure out why a woman who was in some ways extremely strong, a diva, could be so manipulated by guys like this. But first, talk about Billy Sherrill.
Well, Billy Sherrill, man. I mean, if there was – I wish I could talk somebody into letting me write a book about the wit and wisdom of Billy Sherrill. I mean, that would be quite a tome. He's just this very inscrutable guy who grew up not far away from Tammy in similar circumstances, only much poorer, lost his parents very early and was on his own very early. And was played in early rock bands and was very adept at playing various musical instruments. But through the guidance of Sam Phillips, its son, really started to produce records and was just a boy genius. And
if you're going to fall in with somebody, Sam Phillips was a good place to fall.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And that was one of the few things asking – you know, Billy would rather have a root canal and be interviewed. But the name Sam Phillips lit up his eyes immediately. And he was the architect of a end of 60s, 70s sound that really defined Nashville. And, I mean, you all know the hits that he had a hand in Take This Job and Shove It. All the Charlie Rich records.
Behind Closed Doors.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. All the George Jones records, because Tammy
Even Finagle, the early stuff, like White Lightning?
No. George came to Epic right around 71, and
okay.
he was on MusiCorps at the time, and Tammy had to finagle kind of cajole George into coming because he thought Billy was way too pop and way too schlocky, really. And it's funny because talking to Jones, one of the great thrills of my life, the guy's my idol in every way, fashion sense, philosophy, lifestyle choices, everything.
Cocaine psychosis?
Well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't wish any of that on anybody. I mean, it's a wonder that George can walk upright. Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's really an inspiration to me because here he is. He's still doing his thing. He's not a joke. And he lived through all this stuff. I mean, very few. You know, most of the people I've written about are 6 feet under.
Mm-hmm.
And George is still doing his thing. And he's still cool, you know? I mean, I love the guy.
Mm-hmm. When George Jones and Tammy Wynette got together, in some way it improved them both. Certainly it improved Tammy Wynette. I think, first of all, she was in love with the idea of George Jones before she was in love with George Jones.
Oh, from a kid, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And George Jones had that quality again where you hear him singing a song, which in anybody else's hands would be mawkish and stupid.
Yeah.
And it comes out like a one-act play.
I couldn't agree more, man. Just talking about Jones gives me the chills. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. One of the greatest singers America's ever produced. And Tammy, I think, was very intimidated by Jones. And they start doing these duets, and it's so funny because Jones was really the antithesis of Tammy. Tammy would learn a song, want to learn a song, and when she learned it, sing it the same way basically every time. Jones didn't want to learn a song, no way, no how. And once he started singing it, it was different every take. And it so flummoxed Tammy that they'd record George first and then have her overdub because she just couldn't follow him, you know, because he was so erratic In every way, you know? But I make for exciting music. I'm, you know, they're duets, man. They're the best. They're just great.
One of the qualities that I admire in a singer is the ability to take a song that they've sung 1,000 times and make it a new song. Yeah. I think of Sinatra. He'd play with the lyric, he'd play with the tune, he'd play with the rhythm, he'd play with the pacing, whatever it was, so that he wouldn't sing all the way, the same way every time. And Jones is the same way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Apt company. I'd put them right together. And Sinatra was a fan of Jones from what I hear. So, you know, it doesn't get any better.
Okay. Now I'm going to say something really nice about you. And you haven't paid me for this. I just want everybody to know that. I first noticed this in the Neil Young book, but it's really apparent in this book, and that it's one thing to write about music. It's another thing to be so sensitive to the music that you're able to see deeply into an artist and deeply into an artist's work and deeply into the music itself. I'm very impressed with that, Jim.
Well, I thank you. I thank you. I think it's really difficult writing about music, and I just feel like an ape typing one little key at a time. But, I mean, if I can impart some of the excitement or enthusiasm I feel for these people, that's really all I want to do. I mean, I just really – their music changed my life, you know. So,
as a I presume that in some way you were like me, that you spent a lot of your time, a lot of your life just sitting around listening to stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I have a rule about these things. I don't listen to what I'm writing about until I'm writing about it. I deprive myself of the pleasure of listening to it. And when it comes to Jones and Tammy, that was hard. This is stuff I listen to all the time. But I just wanted it to be fresh in my mind when I had to embark on, you know, scribbling something about it. So that helps me, at least.
Let me ask a little bit more about Tammy. There are two things that I don't know if puzzled is exactly the right word, but I had to scratch my head when I thought about these things. One is her health problems. Was she really sick? Does anybody know really what was wrong with her? Why was she in pain all the time? Was it psychosomatic? Was she really sick?
Well, she definitely was really sick because she had these fibrous tumors that would come back, reoccurring scar tissue. And I you know, there definitely. Was there an element of psychological wanting to be sick? One doctor who treated her in an emergency room where she just wanted to get drugs told me as much, that she, you know. Yes. So I think it's a combo platter with a lot of stuff with Tammy. There's no easy yes or no answer. It's a murk. But she definitely had health problems. She definitely had many a surgery, which left her in, people saw her in great pain. But again, I mean, she also had an early disposition to abuse drugs. So, you know, as I say, it's a murk, and I don't think there's any clear answer to any of it.
I think she was addicted to surgery, too. People can't do that.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, when one reporter talked about how Tammy would invite her into her bedroom and just, you know, pull up her nightgown and show her the scars in this very exhibitionist way that made this person very uncomfortable. So, you know, Tammy's, she's not – walk in the park, definitely.
The other thing was the kidnapping.
Yeah, wow. What a.
Well, do you remember Frank Sinatra Jr.?
I mean, yeah, right.
There were kidnappings in those
days.
Did it ever happen?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, that's my opinion, though. That's just my opinion. I just think it was concocted. Now, why it was concocted is a matter of great conjecture, and when you have George Ritchie in the mix.
We need to talk about him a little bit also.
Yeah, the lawyers are warning not to talk so much about Mr. Ritchie, but it's all in the book. This is one complex, convoluted character in a life full of them, man. It's hard to describe Ritchie. You really got to experience all the anecdotes up close, because this guy was just unbelievable.
He was her last husband.
Yes, indeed, and
he's,
manager.
He's still kicking? He's still alive?
Yes, he is.
And as I read the book, the only thing I could think of is, why didn't she just kick his butt into the street? She was making all the money. She was the one who
That's
was.
That's right.
She had all of the cards except one, and that was the ace that he was holding. And what do you have any idea what his hold was over her?
Well, you know, I just think Tammy was tired, you know. By that time, she'd been through the ringer. And she wasn't young anymore. And I think, well, you know, she told one of her hairdresser friends that, you know, my fans just can't take another divorce. And she said, Tammy, your fans love it when you get divorced. What are you talking about? They know there'll be five more great albums. But, you know, she was tired and she could depend on him. And, you know, again, it was a merc. I don't think there's any straightforward, was he a villain? Was he, I mean, a case can be made definitely after you read this book. But, you know, Tammy was complicit in her own affairs, and she was given many an opportunity to change the facts of her life. She didn't, you know.
Assisted in her own oppression.
Well, you know, she was as headstrong as Jones was. I mean, you know, Jones happened to find the right dame, Nancy Jones, his wife, who definitely, I mean, he credits her with saving his life. And she's played a role. She manages him. She takes care of everything. The situation with Richie and Tammy is a little different than it turned out for Jones.
We have a couple of minutes left. Was Tammy ever happy?
Well, you know, I asked Billy Sherrill and Jones, both of people who don't really, I don't know, they're strangely protective and unnerved, I think, by Tammy. But they both told me they never thought that Tammy was happy.
No
and
kidding.
If anybody would know.
They would.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Richie, the Richophiles, whatever you'd call them, they're very upset with this book, mm-hmm. understandably so. And they say, you know, I've got it all wrong, and she was happy and just dancing a jig until she left this earth. Well, you know, there's overwhelming it. I mean, you know, I looked. I wanted the happy stuff. Believe me. I wanted some relief from the grimness. I didn't find it. You know what I mean? And it's sad. Tammy should be she was a legend. She should be here now. She should be talking to you on the radio. She should be kicking back with her great-grandkids and mm-hmm. recording with Bono or whatever atrocity they'd foist on her for $1 million. That's what she should be doing. And it didn't work out that way.
An elder stateswoman of country music.
That's right. Yeah. And it didn't work out that way, and it's a terrible thing. Really.
If we had an hour, I would take you through people like Whitey Puckett, because the characters in Nashville, before Nashville became commodified, commercialized, and ruined, saying that.
No.
The backup bands for all of the singers that came through Nashville, the backup bands for all the singers that came through Memphis. Tennessee was the naval of roots music universe in those days.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah,
these
right.
guys were all nuts. All they did was take uppers and play music. I mean, that was pretty much their whole lives.
Yeah, right. It doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't seem to.
No.
What are you going to do? But again, you know, at least it's all out there for people to appreciate.
Okay, last question. What are you working on now? Don't you like to talk about these things?
I'm very superstitious about this. For one, I've been working on a novel like every other idiot for an eternity.
Why don't you just hire somebody to beat you up? It takes less time, you know?
Yeah, well, you might have a point there. And it's about all my personal obsessions. And I hopefully one day I can look at it without vomiting, and then I can – foisted on the world. But several things are going through my head, but I've never had a publisher so happy with a book. If there was ever a time for me to pull an ace out of my shirt pocket, it's now, and I really don't have it, so I don't know.
Oh, isn't that awful? You get the opportunity and the idea's not there.
Yeah. And with me, it's a big commitment. It's not like I can just go, has someone done a biography on Moby? I mean, I wish I could be that way, but I'm not that kind of guy. I got to feel it down in the Grinch, as Russ Meyer said. And right now, I mean, so many people have either been done or they're not here or anyway, I won't whine anymore, but I'll find something eventually.
Okay. Well, when you do, we want you to come back and talk about it. I always love to talk to you. Jimmy McDonough, the author of Tammy Wynette, published by Viking. Come again, kid.
Oh, I will. Always a pleasure, Ed. Thank you.